I'm John Krall. This year marks the 10th anniversary of the Indiana Authors Awards. We're going to take a look today at the 10 years that the Indiana Authors Awards have been in existence and at the state of literature here in Indiana. My guests are Katie Withers with the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, Elaine Drew, who is one of the panelists of judges determining the winners for this year, and Indiana author James Alexander Tom, who is receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award. Please join the conversation by calling 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Please, now this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a special moment in Indiana literary history here. This is the 10th anniversary of the Indiana Authors Awards. We're going to talk about the significance of those awards and about the state of literature here in Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are a couple of veterans of the program, Katie Withers with the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation and the Indiana Authors Awards, an old friend of the program, was, I think, one of the early guests on here, Indiana author James Alexander Tom. He's the author of many, many books. I'm just going to cite my favorite of his books, Panther in the Sky. The rest of them, obviously, we could find, but if I listed them all, we'd run out of time. And then Elaine Drew, who is one of the panel of judges this year and also has been a researcher for the Indiana Authors Awards. Welcome back to two of you, and Elaine, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So, Katie, talk to me a little bit about the history of the Indiana Authors Awards, and then we'll dive into where things are this year.
Sure. So, like you mentioned, we're in our 10th year. It was really the brainchild of Eugene Glick. He had written a book, and he found in the process of writing the book that it's difficult to be an author, and he really wanted to do something to honor all the work that authors put in, and he really liked the idea of honoring authors that came from Indiana, his home state. So the goal of the award is to promote a love of reading and writing throughout the state of Indiana by honoring the very diverse literary talent that we have here in the state. So we have a public nomination process that happens each year. It's going on right now through March 16th. And then from those public nominations, we have a panel, which includes Elaine, of literary experts from across the state that help pick our winners. And then the winners in a few different categories, they get a cash prize, and they also get some money that they can give to the public library of their choosing in Indiana. And then throughout the year, we have different outreach events and workshops and other things to get people reading and writing.
What are the categories?
The categories are national, which James Alexander Tom was actually our very first national author winner, and that's somebody who has a profile outside of Indiana as well. Regional Author Award, which is somebody that is, you know, well-known and loved throughout Indiana. Often their writing has kind of a Hoosier sensibility to it. And then we have the Emerging Author Award, which is for an author who's just kind of getting started on their career. They've only written one or two books in the last 10 years. These last couple years, we've also had a category called Genre Excellence, which rotates each year to celebrate a different genre. So we've had children's picture books and middle grade fiction. This year we're taking a break so that we can give a Lifetime Achievement Award to James Alexander Tom, but then the Genre Excellence Award will continue.
Okay. And Elaine, and I should say, in the interest of full disclosure with the audience, I was on the panel at one time. I served for 3 years. So it's an exhilarating experience because you get to read a lot of great books. The problem is that you have to read an awful lot of books in a hurry.
I haven't gotten to that point. We haven't gotten there yet. Yeah. We have to wait till all the nominations are in.
You're thinking, okay, I'm making good progress on this. And then, but is this your first year?
Yes, it is. Okay. But I did do research for the committee the past 3 years, which was a lot of fun because I got to look up the background information about the authors and what they'd published, that sort of thing.
Oh, you mean when we were on the panel, that sort of stuff just didn't appear magically?
That's right. Someone was doing that.
Okay. Jim, How does it feel to be the Lifetime Achievement Award winner this year?
Well, first thing, I think the fact that I've achieved getting this old is good enough. But it's a very pleasant surprise. I find out that I've worked for a long, long time, and somebody thinks I did something good, you know. So I wasn't thinking of awards. I was just thinking of telling a story. But somebody thinks it's good, and that's nice. It looks good on my resume or obituary, whichever I need first.
So, and I know a little bit about, obviously, the chronology of your work, but this comes pretty close to 50 years after you published your first book, right?
First one was published in 76, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I thought you'd done one in the late 60s.
No, I had written some by then, okay. But none got published until later.
Until 76, so it's the 40th anniversary then.
About that,
okay.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Still, that's a pretty good span.
Yeah. It is a very good span. Well,
I'm still at it, too. But.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. I know one of the – well, I'll ask you, since you're the author in this group, what does it mean to have competitions like this supporting the process? Because, as you know, the economics of writing can be brutal.
Well, the fact that you can – if you can make a living off your writing, that's about all I could ask for, of course, you know. But then when the first time I won the Glick Award, it helped, of course. Mm-hmm. But it was totally unexpected, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is too, but I don't think of it in terms of the economics, because to me, economics is now it's Social Security and royalties, mm-hmm. you know.
And, well, and is that part of, Katie, the impulse behind this is to nurture that kind of talent? Because I guess where I was going, and I probably was being a little too ambiguous in the question, something that has stuck with me when I published my book several years ago, I remember reading, I think, in an Authors Guild publication that there are 600,000 published authors in the United States and Canada, and only 3,000 of them don't have day jobs.
Right.
Yeah.
Which means that only 1 in 200 published authors can actually make a living just off of their books. So you got to figure out some other way to sustain this kind of activity.
Right. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the cash prize component, it's a motivator, but it also essentially buys time for these authors. You know, like the National Author Prize is a $10,000. That's $10,000 that can help with, you know, personal or professional expenses. So they have more time to focus on writing, which is what we want. We want them to keep writing and putting out their stories into the world. So,
Elaine, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge of switching from researcher to judge this year?
Well, I think it will be the time factor of reading all the books, but I am retired, so that's a plus, and I enjoy reading, so looking forward to it.
How many entries do you typically get during the course of a year, Katie?
Yeah, we typically get around 200 nominations each year, and I would say maybe 150 of those are unique authors, because we'll get repeat nominations for authors people really love. But I'd say it's about 100 hours of reading for these panelists between when the nomination period ends and when we pick our winners. So it's a lot of work.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the 10th anniversary of the Indiana Authors Awards here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Jim, it's 40 years of writing books or having them published, and you started the process a lot easier. What changes in the landscape, literary landscape, have you seen here in Indiana? I mean, is it easier for a writer to gain footing now, or is it harder?
That's hard for me to say because I'm sort of a dinosaur. You know, I had, thank heaven that I had a good career back in the days when they did things that way, you know, with the editors and a publisher and before the self-publishing got so big. A big change that has taken place is that now you have an awful lot of people. They call it more democratic because people can get their books published without having to get through, you know, the squeeze. Mm-hmm. But it has caused newspapers, for example, reviewers, don't take books seriously anymore as the way they used to. Book reviewing used to be a big thing mm-hmm. in the newspapers, and now they just hardly touch them because there are so many self-published authors. And a lot of those are good, mm-hmm. very good, some very good ones. But there was always a lot of junk out there in the old way, too. But at least there were people kind of filtering stuff, you know. The thing now is that so many authors have to take on the whole business of promoting their own books. They get on the social media, they build platforms, and I have some writer friends who do self-publish some of the time, or if not all the time, and they say that that's just hell because it doesn't leave them any time to write mm-hmm. because they're always trying to get the word out, you know. And, of course, book distributing has changed, too, since Amazon came along and bookstores went out of business, and the whole thing is, I wouldn't want to start now. It would scare me to death. I would probably just say, no, I'm not going to write. I think I'll be a forest ranger, which is what I originally wanted to
plan to do. Anyway. Yeah. Well, Katie, I'll throw that to you. I mean, has the landscape, because in some ways, Jim says, it's a lot more democratic with a small D in that, you know, the barriers to entry are lower than they once were. But a lot of the support systems, I mean, most newspapers don't review books, some for the reasons that Jim's talking about, some because a lot of them have just slashed Arch coverage altogether.
That's a big part of it, too.
They haven't figured out how to monetize that, so with their margins decreasing, they just don't do it anymore. Does that make it better, or you know, in terms of talking with the writers who are coming up these days, do they find it to be a more difficult landscape or a more supportive one?
I hear it more difficult because I think it's just really hard to break through the noise. And so I think that's where an award program like this is helpful, because winning an award gets you some press. It kind of helps you break through that noise. But one of the things that I'm really proud of with this program is that we have a day called Meet an Author, Be an Author. And part of that day is we have an indie author fair where people who, many of them are self-published, you know, they're just starting out, can have a table, they can talk about their books. But one feedback that we get from these authors that participate in the fair is that they get to meet other authors and support each other in that journey. So we're trying to make it a more supportive environment, but I do think that it's difficult to break through.
We probably ought to talk about what the timeline is for this. The nominations close on March 16th. When do you make decisions other than Jim about who the winners are going to be?
Jim was something we've been wanting to do for a while, so we knew about him. Yeah. But, yeah, so public nominations in March 16th. And if you want to nominate someone, you can do that at IndianaAuthorsAward.org. They'll make their decisions in June, the panel, about who wins, and then we announce it publicly in mid-July. And then the award dinner and the Meet an Author, Be an Author Indie Author Fair that I mentioned, that all happens October 13th.
October 13th, okay. And, you know, you've got 200... people, how quickly do you begin to winnow that down? Are there stages within that?
I've already started looking through the list of who's been nominated so far and trying to, you know, think through, well, yeah, let's keep this one, let's not. But the committee will do that together the next 2 months probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is it still? I remember there were a surprisingly few number of meetings because you wanted to have most of the time devoted to reading and getting through through the material, but you had to get through that, narrow it down pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still like that. We have 4 meetings total, and only 3 of them are meetings where we're actively talking about the book. So, but I feel like at least the last couple of years, and maybe your experience was like this too, John, that the panel comes to a pretty good consensus about what our short group of authors is pretty quickly. So,
we are talking about the 10th anniversary of the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards. Here on No Limits today, my guests are Elaine Drew, Katie Withers, and James Alexander Tom. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards this year, which are marking their 10th anniversary. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are a veteran of the program, James Alexander Tom, who is a lifetime achievement recipient this year for the Authors Awards and is the author of many, many books. Including Follow the River, my favorite, Panther in the Sky, and too many others to list. Elaine Drew, who has been a researcher for the awards competition and is one of the panel of judges this year, and Katie Withers, who is with the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. So I want to talk, and we were talking over the break about this, that I'd like to talk a bit about how the landscape for writers has changed. One of my other roles here, I just did a column about Ross Lockridge Jr. and Raintree County. We're coming up on the 70th anniversary of Lockridge's death. And, you know, we don't really see stories like that anymore. I mean, this is a guy who worked 7 years on his book, which was a monster, more than 1,000 pages long, and using many different kinds of literary techniques and all of that. Really, really experimental, even for its time, probably still so today. And it's not an effortless read. I mean, there are parts of it that are pretty challenging. Yet that book, when it came out in January of 1948, sold out its first printing in the space of a day, in 24 hours, and he was lionized as this huge figure. Do we see the equivalent of that kind of attention devoted to writers these days? I'll start with Jim on that one.
Well, I didn't know Ross Lockridge. Mm-hmm. Kurt Vonnegut was kind of a phenomenon in that he had written short stories for so long, and then all of a sudden Slaughterhouse-Five came out, and suddenly he was a literary star, and he was no longer poor. Mm-hmm. And Kurt was a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And he all of a sudden his whole life changed, his whole family's life changed. But that was an almost one of those overnight things that comes after 18 years 40, of labor.
46 you know. Years old and been publishing for tons of years.
I had had rejection slips from just about everybody in the world before I ever sold anything. I had so many rejection slips that I would sometimes send back the ones that were not up to my standards. You know. But mine was a very slow thing. I didn't suddenly burst into the but I had a book that just kept selling for 30 some years, and it's in its 50th printing now, and that's the best kind of thing to have is some that stay out there. for a long, long time instead of something that appears and then is gone off the shelves, you see. So, but I don't know a whole lot of writers. Writing is a kind of a solitary thing. Mm-hmm. I have a few really good friendships with people who are good writers. But we don't see each other a whole lot because we're too busy being hermits, you see. As far as the big landscape, I can't tell you much about it because I am a hermit. I never had a whole lot of contacts in the publishing world because for 27 years I had the same publisher and the same editor, so I wasn't out there getting to know people. The fact that I stayed in Indiana, too, instead of going to New York, made it a different circumstance. You know, Kurt went to went to New York, and Dan Wakefield went to New York, and they kept writing with an Indiana flavor, but they were not writing from Indiana.
Well, and we've had Dan Wakefield on this program. He's also been honored by the Authors Awards. Himself, and in talking with him, I should have realized by the timing or whatever, but, you know, Going All the Way came out not long after Slaughterhouse-Five did, and they were both books that sort of thrust their authors into the limelight. They were the two most famous writers from Indiana, and at least they both told me, Kurt was a friend of mine as well, that at different, at pretty much the same time, the two most famous writers from Indiana who were alive had their books banned here. They could not deal with them, which I guess also speaks to, the literary scene here and how it has evolved over time, Katie.
Yeah, actually, I think that's interesting you talk about the banned books, because those two have had banned books, but then also two of our other winners, John Green and Barb Shoup, have also had books that have been banned here in Indiana. So I don't know what that says about us in Indiana. But I do think that it's interesting that you talked about Kurt Vonnegut and Dan Wakefield and how, even though they left Indiana, they still had that Indiana flavor. And I think that's really cool because it helps shine a spotlight on Indiana outside of where we are. So,
yeah, and Dan is, after some convincing, he finally came back to Indiana.
Yes, he's living.
I think
revisiting all his old
thoughts.
He thinks
it's the best thing he ever did. Yeah, he's back home.
Well, and I wonder, some of it is, as you say, you have made your career here in Indiana. You've been able to continue writing from here. Just reference John Green, who's made a conscious decision to stay in Indianapolis, even though he's got a worldwide following. He's been a guest on this program as well. When I talked with Kurt, he said there really wasn't much choice, though, if you were trying to break in in the 40s and 50s. You pretty much had to go to New York. So is that one of the ways things have changed here, is that you can write from almost anywhere? I see Elaine and Katie both nodding vigorously.
I'll
throw it to Elaine
that.
There. Okay. And what has that done then for the writers who make up this kind of literary community here in Indiana, Katie?
Yeah, I think this is kind of true of all art forms, not just writing, but music and theater and things here. It used to be, you know, if you were in theater, you had to go to New York City or L.A. or Chicago. But now we've got such a rich scene here, too. So I just think that culture in general, especially in Indianapolis, but we also see a lot of literary talent coming out of Fort Wayne and Bloomington as well. People are interested in that sort of thing, and they really like the idea of having local people and really supporting local artists. And so I do think it's easier to be a writer and stay here in Indiana. And again, it goes back to that idea of, like, now you have self-publishing as an option, and, you know, there's literary agents all over. They're not all just concentrated in New York City, so you can write wherever you are.
The technology of writing, too, and sending stuff in on computers, I have not been able to keep up with that. I still use a typewriter, and the computer scares me to death. I've lost stuff, you know.
Do because the field has advanced so far in that. Now, do they ask you when you send your publishers classic typewritten manuscripts? I guess they're technically typescripts, but
yeah.
Do they ask you to scan them in, or is there some other?
They want them on a disk.
Okay.
And so I've had to figure out ways to do that, you know. But I still don't like to write on a screen.
Now, has it changed? I know when I was on the panel, and I'll throw this to both Elaine and Katie, part of the challenge, people had not really made the full transition to e-readers at the time, which meant everywhere you were going, it felt like you were carrying 50 pounds of books uh-huh. with you because you were trying to buy every spare moment to get through them. Is it now that many of the submissions are in the ebook format, or are you still reading the traditional?
I think they're still in the traditional book, and I have to admit that I still prefer reading the print, the book.
I prefer reading physical books too, and I think the panel prefers reading physical books, so we still order mainly physical copies from local bookstores when we're reviewing things. But we do have some submissions that are only in ebook format, mm-hmm. so that's been kind of interesting too. And all the submissions are online, so that's kind of a technological change. Like, you submit your nomination online, and then the author research and stuff that we do, that's all online as well.
Yes.
So yeah, mm-hmm. it helps us.
Who's doing the author research now that you've drafted Elaine and put her in?
We have an intern this year, Emily. She's wonderful. So she is a Kelley School of Business student. She's interested in going into the publishing world. So this is good research for her to really look at the authors and look at different book reviews. And so she's been gathering that for the panelists this year.
How has the competition changed over the decade? Because I wasn't there at the beginning. I think I came in after the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And was on for, I guess that would put me through years 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have there been changes in the way that it's approached or anything like that, Katie?
Yeah, I can only speak. I've been with the award program almost 4 years now, mm-hmm. so I can kind of only speak from that time frame. But we're doing a lot more outreach through this award program than we did when we first started it. We obviously still have the award dinner and the cash prizes, and that's a big bulk of what we do. But we're doing more outreach to local schools and getting authors to do talks at schools. We're doing more for aspiring writers through different workshops and partnerships with Indiana Writers Center and Novel Conversations and Indiana Humanities. So I think that's the biggest change, is that we're trying to get this really to all corners of the state and make sure that people that want to write can really learn from our winners.
Have you thought, and we've invoked a couple of writers here who are no longer with us, Kurt Vonnegut, Ross Lockridge Jr. There are obviously other significant figures in the history of Indiana literature. Has there been any thought given to posthumous awards?
We have considered it. I think, again, because we're doing so much outreach, we really like, you know, that the authors are living and can, you know, people can meet them and get to see a working author in their own community. So we haven't made that step yet to honor someone in that way, but we've definitely had those conversations.
Mm-hmm. And what are the things, obviously, the things we're talking about, meet the authors and all of that are traditional things. Are there specific things that you're doing to celebrate the 10th anniversary this year?
Yes. So we're kind of officially unveiling all the anniversary plans next month. So I can't talk too much, but we are involving our past winners in different ways. And we're doing a partnership with Indiana State Library. We're going to have a couple campaigns all throughout the state to get public libraries involved. So we're excited about that. And then we're going to have some mobile pieces that will go around to different places in the community that really tell the story of the award program with timelines and different things like that. But if you want to stay up to date on our anniversary plans, if you go to indianaauthorsaward.org, in the top right-hand corner, you can put in your email, and then we send out a monthly newsletter that talks about all the different things we're doing.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards, which are celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I'll ask this. Over the past 10 years, we have seen some people emerge. I mean, I remember when I was on the panel, the first year, I think, we first started hearing about this guy, John Green. And there actually was, to be fair, even a degree of suspicion about it because we were getting bombarded with messages regarding him, and it felt a bit like an orchestrated campaign. We did not realize at the time the power of Twitter and other emerging social media, and it was that he just had so many followers that he was doing that, and then he exploded. I mean, he was a national award winner, I think, the second or third year.
2012, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought it was earlier than that.
I think it was 2012, so.
Okay, well, I may be, you know, getting senile in my old age and have conflated things, but who are some of the other... other than our distinguished guest here, heavyweights who have been recipients of the Authors Awards?
Yeah, so of course James Alexander, Tom and John Green are two you mentioned. I'd say Barb Shoop is a big one. Phil Gawley, who used to have a show here on WFII, he's one. Adrian Matika, who's our current state poet laureate, he won in 2015. And that was a similar situation to John Green, where we kind of caught him right as he was just about to explode. So those are just some of the big ones. Last year, our winners were Kecla Magoon, Laurie Rader Day, and John David Anderson. And both of them, or all three of them, are kind of in the prime of their careers right now.
Go ahead, Jim.
I'm surprised that I've never seen Michael Carita win something. He's a Bloomington fellow.
Mm-hmm.
Used to work for the same paper down there that I did. Mm-hmm. And he's big, but he's in a genre.
Mm-hmm.
The mysteries.
Mystery novelist. I think a lot of them are actually, even though he's from Bloomington, a lot of them are based in my birthplace, Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh. But,
yeah.
You know, or out west, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who are the other surprises, Jim, that you've never seen as a recipient here?
What did you say?
I said, who are some other authors that are worthy of that kind of recognition who haven't been honored
well,
yet?
I think Ian Woolen, he's a man who has family connections with the Tarkingtons and even with Vonnegut in a way, because at one time he lived in one of the Vonnegut
houses
and so forth.
Yeah.
But Ian is a...
And his father was the architect who designed the library.
Right,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But Ian is a wonderful writer, and he's also... And he's a psychologist, and he's just a master at writing about dysfunctional families, which are always for good literature, you know.
Yeah, the famous Tolstoy line, happy families
are
all alike.
When we get together, we authors and talk about things, you know. Scott Sanders is a good friend of mine from down in Bloomington.
Mm-hmm.
He won the next year after I did.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think of in terms of winning something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the nice thing about getting an award like this is I can get that, but nobody else has to lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so it's not a zero-sum game. Yeah,
you know, it's not like writers feel like they're competing with each other, even though they are. They're competing for – they used to compete for editors' attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now – God knows what they're competing for. Social media attention, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Elaine, which part of the judging intrigues you the most? I mean, which are the categories? And I'll say when I was there, the ones that, you know, often the established writers, the ones who were competing for the national prize, I already knew it was the emerging ones that excited me because I was finding new talent.
Well,
there.
And even the regional also, because there's fewer that are nominated for the regional, and how do you define that category?
We are talking about the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards here on No Limits today. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Katie Withers of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, Elaine Drew, who is one of the judges for the competition this year, and the Lifetime Achievement winner, James Alexander Tom, author of Panther in the Sky, Follow the River, and many other books. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please Stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Awards today on No Limits. The Authors Awards are marking their 10th anniversary this year, and we are blessed to have with us James Alexander Tom, who is the author of many books. I keep citing the one that's my favorite, Panther in the Sky, but Follow the River. There are many, many others. He is the Lifetime Achievement recipient this year. Elaine Drew, who's been a researcher for the competition in the past and is one of the panel of judges this year. And Katie Withers with the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation and is really, in many ways, the godmother now.
Babysitter.
For the awards. So what kind of care and feeding do authors require here, Katie? I'll ask that.
That's a interesting question. All of our authors have been so easygoing, so that's been really cool. And we love caring and feeding for our authors, you know, loving and supporting them. So we're really excited to be able to do this year after year.
So let's walk through again, because there are people who just joined the program. If someone wants to nominate a writer, and we probably ought to talk a little bit about what the criteria are for each category, that it doesn't have to be someone who was born in Indiana or, you know, even still living here, but there has to be a significant Indiana connection.
Yeah, so just kind of the basic criteria is that they either have had to have been born in Indiana or have lived in Indiana for at least 5 years at some point in their life. So that's kind of the basic criteria. And then there's three categories they can nominate authors in. National category, that's someone that really has a national profile, would be known outside of Indiana. Regional, which is someone that's kind of well-known and loved throughout the state. And then emerging, which is somebody who's written only one or two books in the last 10 years, and they're really just kind of starting out on this writing journey. So anyone can nominate. An author can nominate themselves if they'd like. We do accept self-published submissions, but if they are self-published, we ask that they upload two chapters of their work so that we can review it a little easier for those self-published submissions.
And which categories typically receive the most submissions? I'll throw that to Elaine.
Probably the national, well, and the emerging. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that this year I was going over the list for this year, and it was those two. And the regionals didn't have mm-hmm. that many, so
I think people either think they're emerging or they're like, you know, they're at the top or at the bottom. They don't always think of themselves as just regional. So,
well, is there a struggle? Because I remember, at least when I was on the panel, making that distinction between regional and national gets somewhat difficult. And I'm not going to mention any names, but I think there was one recipient during my tenure who was a little almost offended by receiving the regional award because this person or author perceived, I'll make it non-gender specific, herself or himself as a national writer. You know, how do those categories get established by the nomination, or does the panel sort of vet them and say, well, this person would be more appropriate in the national category or the regional one?
We do move the nominees into different categories from what they were, how it was submitted, okay. Sometimes.
And is it possible for people to repeat? I mean, you know, Jim has published books since he first won the national award. Mm-hmm. Would that qualify him to be a recipient again?
Well, you can win an award in the next category up. So if someone won an emerging award, they could win regional or national farther down the road. If they won regional,
Jim's
they win national.
Jim's topped out. Man.
Yeah, Jim has topped out. And that's part of why we gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award, because even after he won, people nominated him year after year after year because they just really love his work. And so we wanted to do something special to honor all those other nominations.
Jim?
Yeah, I'm through winning awards maybe. But I've got a real good thing coming up. You know, you mentioned Panther in the Sky. That's the biographical novel about Tecumseh. Mm-hmm. Tecumseh's 250th birth anniversary is coming up this spring, and I've been given the honor of giving the keynote talk at the programs for over in Ohio, down by Cincinnati, to do a tribute to that great American patriot.
Is there, and I know authors dislike, I love that book. Well, you haven't written one that I have not enjoyed. I think the thing that that separated that book from me was that it was almost poetically charged. I mean, that the real there was a real kind of lyricism that approached the spiritual and a lot of that. Are there books of yours that have given you more satisfaction than others, or is it, you know, they're like your children and you love them all?
It when I stepped over and began living with and being a part of the Indian people and writing about them, it put me up onto a whole new plateau of consciousness, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd been a newspaper man and a skeptic, and only, mm-hmm. I only believed what I read or saw. And then I got into a spiritual level that indicates to I just didn't have my antennas out until I started living with those people. And so I've always felt when I'm writing about them that I'm more into the poetic and spiritual realm mm-hmm. than I ever was before. And I've also was lucky enough to marry the finest Shawnee woman I ever met.
Your wife, Dark Rain, who's been a guest on this show, too. Yeah. So I want to talk then, because some of the, there are a couple areas I want to explore here with you. The first is, I agree with you. I think that Panther in the Sky sort of marks a dividing line in your work, that that some of the books that came before mm-hmm. were much more traditional, and not that they were insensitive or anything like that, but you know, how whether there is any of your work you would like to go back and revisit or revise, or do you just let it go and say, okay, that book was written in its time and place, and we're going to let it stand?
If I had more time, and I don't know how much more time I have, but if I had more time, I would go back and do a little tweaking here and there as I realized that I could have emphasized something a little differently. But if I did that, then I would have a very difficult time getting Random House to change it anyway, because mm-hmm. they have their stocks of books there. And going back through an editor and changing something, mm-hmm. they probably would say, well, it's not worth it.
And then the other thing is, you made reference to, you know, writers working within genres, and sometimes that doesn't, mm-hmm. those writers don't get the respect they deserve. Do you speak to some degree from experience? I mean, you are primarily a writer of historical fiction.
I am in a genre that I just fell into. I wasn't smart enough to pick it out. Some people from the Historical Society talked me into doing my first historical novel, and I've never been able to get out of that period. But it is unusual to be writing in one genre, except if you write well enough and cover enough about the human spirit, it doesn't matter whether you're in a genre or not. Mm-hmm. Remember, people used to try to tell Kurt Vonnegut he was a science fiction writer.
You know? Yeah.
And he knew better. He was way beyond just that, you know. But the human spirit is always the inspiration for me to even take up something as difficult as writing a book. Mm-hmm. Having a chance to pass on the inspiration, I think, is probably the best opportunity I've ever had and been able to use. Another thing is, we have this wonderful English language, mm-hmm. which I just I would be, even if I weren't a writer, I would be fascinated with it all the time. I think, you know, I just ran across a word. There's always a specific word for something.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how complicated it is, there's a word. Mm. I ran across a word the other day that you've probably heard of, kakiocracy.
No, actually, you have stumped me here.
Okay, it means government by the worst people.
Okay. So I don't think I need to understand context here you were looking, but yeah.
But the thing is that the language is, English language is so rich and muscular and comes from so many places that people, you know, like Nabokov and Joseph Conrad eventually ended up writing in English instead of their native tongues because they could do more with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that wonderful tool we have.
Well, and even Kerouac, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think he was a French-Canadian and grew up speaking French primarily. Yeah. So are there categories then of books or of writing that, Elaine, you find harder to evaluate than others?
I struggle with poetry because I don't know how to I just struggle with that. I don't know how to evaluate it.
And those, I think that's a typical thing in part because it is, at least most of the poets I know would argue that you don't do justice to their poetry unless you speak it to some degree, that it has to be done through sound, and that's difficult to do if, you know, without seeming somewhat demented. If you're reading it aloud in a crowded space or whatever. Are there go ahead, Jim.
I was going to ask, do you get much of what they call experimental fiction? This is where somebody starts off in a new way. For example, in his time, James Joyce did the experimental stuff, and it was totally new at the time. And it was awfully hard for people to interpret and even to evaluate it because there wasn't anything to stack it up against, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of people who are always trying to figure out a new way to do things. For example, George Saunders did this book called Lincoln and the Bardo.
Mm, yeah.
Yes.
Which I thought was just an absolute masterpiece. Mm-hmm. But it took me a while to say, hey, this is a totally new way to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
But I stuck with it because Lincoln's my favorite American.
Yeah. Well, and I think Michael Martone has been an award recipient, and he's heavily into experimental fiction. We've gotten an email from a listener named Mary, and if you want to join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. She writes, ever considered Haven Kimmel, A Girl Named Zippy, about growing up in Moreland, Indiana?
I do know Haven Kimmel, and I have read that book and really enjoyed it. Mary can nominate Haven Kimmel by going to IndianaAuthorsAward.org. It takes about 5 minutes to fill out a nomination form, so it's quick and easy.
That's because I think she was on the list even when I was on the panel, that she was always one of those books that we were considering. Are there names that are sort of like the, you know, the Buffalo Bills or the Brooklyn Dodgers, you know, they're always bumping up right close to that top level and never quite make it through.
Yeah, there are definitely those names. I won't say who, you know, because hopefully down the road those people will win the award. But I think it's a testament to how much talent we have here in the state that we have so many good options to pick from each year. So.
And that people are reading them, too.
Yes, and that people are reading them and nominating them, yeah.
Is that one of the surprises you get, is that how many people actually really care about these books and the writers? Because that was one of the things when we'd find out about the nominations, is you realize, you know, it's not like this is a completely effortless thing to sit down and you make it, reduce the barriers as much as possible, but somebody has to have read the book, and then they have to know about the Indiana Authors Awards. They have to go find the website. They have to make the time to submit the nomination. That's got to be somewhat encouraging, I would think, Katie.
Yeah, and I think it's encouraging for the authors, too. You know, I think, like Jim said, it's a solitary pursuit, writing. You don't always realize the impact that your words have on readers. So I think this is kind of a cool thing to know that someone nominated you, and then the panel read it, and they loved it, and now we're giving you this award. So, but reading through the nomination forms, and Elaine might agree, like, seeing what people say about the authors, that's my favorite part. I think that's really interesting.
Well, and that, for me, it was also to discover that this particular author had an Indiana connection. The one that comes to mind is the Jane Austen Book Club, the Karen Joy Fowler. Mm-hmm. I had no idea she was nominated,
She won in 2016, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I had no idea there was an Indiana connection there. So that, to me, that's fun to learn those kinds of things.
Well, and is it a rediscovery of that? You know, I mean, it was a time when Indianapolis and Indiana were considered kind of a literary center about a century ago. And then we had a fairly major publisher, Bob's Merrill, here for years.
Yeah. Yeah, they used to wonder what was in the air and the water in Indiana to make a backwater place like this have so many big literary stars.
So we had Booth Tarkington, Theodore Dreiser, number of people.
Yeah, and I think this was a stop on the author circuit, that they would come to Indiana or Indianapolis.
Well, the libraries were a big thing then, and there were many, many literary clubs in those days because people didn't have other things to pass their time with, you know.
And that's one of the things, actually, when we were talking about Ross Lockridge, I said, you know, authors in that era had some of the buzz that rock stars get today. I mean, there was this quality that you really defined yourself by the people you read.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're getting close on time here. Katie, let's walk through one more time how it is people can submit and the timeline, particularly talk about when the dinner is and the Meet the Authors.
Yeah, so the public nomination process is going on right now through March 16th. If you go to IndianaAuthorsAward.org, there's a nomination form you can fill out. It's quick and easy. Anyone can nominate. We'll pick our winners and announce them by mid-July. And then October 13th is during the day at Central Library in downtown Indianapolis. We have lots of free writing workshops and author fair, and we call that event Meet an Author, Be an Author. And then in the evening, we have the ticketed award dinner.
And what is the cost to attend the dinner?
For an individual person, it's $75, but we also have table sponsorships that companies can sponsor. That's $1,000 for eight tickets.
Eight tickets. Mm-hmm. And I think the takeaway from all of this is that really from March 16th through probably July 1, no one should bother Elaine because she's going to be busy reading. I would like to thank all three of my guests, James Alexander, Tom, noted Hoosier author and this year's Lifetime Achievement recipient for the Indiana Authors Awards, one of the judges, Elaine Drew, and Katie Withers of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. Also like to thank our listeners for hanging in there and some great questions. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.